producer Casey here. Before we get into this excellent episode about Mortal Kombat with the wonderful Nick Weiger, we here at the Untitled Iffy, Dre, and Alonzo Project have two gigantic announcements. Alonzo, are you excited?
Always.
Okay, great. Okay, number one. Next week begins the Max Fund Drive. This is the time of year where we get most of our funding for the entire year. It's because of the members of Maximum Fund that support our show that this show exists. The Max Fund Drive begins on Monday, May 3rd, and runs all the way through May 14th. If you listen to the show and you don't support us, please consider becoming a member for as little as $5 a month. In all honesty, we're a humble movie podcast, and we truly, any amount really helps keep the show going. You think other bigger movie podcasts aren't trying to poach these hosts? Because they are. Okay, so the Max Fun Drive is coming up, which is why we are introducing something very special for the next 2 weeks. Iffy, you've put something together that's very important, and what is it?
Well, for the next 2 weeks, we will be discussing an illustrious collection of films that I have personally assembled with hours of meticulous research, meditation, and speaking to experts far and wide. I would like to introduce you all to the Iffy Chakude Collection.
Wow. Starting,
yeah. Take it in, drink it in, feel the energy. Because starting next week, with the first week of the Max Fun Drive, we will be discussing Pacific Rim with the Flophouse's Elliot Kalin. The second installment of the collection will be covered in week number 2 of the Max Fun Drive, where we will speak to Carl Tart about another classique, Space Jam. And the third and final installment will be a bonus episode for Maximum Fun members only. And for that, we'll be talking about Harlem Nights with Fantais, Travell Anderson, and Jared Hill. Make sure to get the whole collection by becoming a member at MaximumFun.org/join.
Excellent. Thank you, Iffy. Drea, does this sound like the Iffy Chakude collection is more important than the Criterion?
It depends on what you think of the word important meaning, but yes.
Better quality?
It is definitely something compared to the Criterion collection.
Okay, we also have another huge announcement. Isn't that right, Drea?
That's right. A few weeks ago, we changed the name of our podcast to the Untitled Iffy, Drea, and Alonzo Project. It was always meant to be a temporary name, especially because the comma after the ampersand was driving Alonzo into a psychotic rage, and I support him in that. So we do need to rename the show officially and forever, and we need your help.
Yes, you guys, you listeners, you're very important to us. You make the show what it is as much as we do. I mean, yes, we never call you every week and ask you what movie we should do, and you have to yell at your speaker and not have us respond to you. But nonetheless, it's as though you are part of the show, because you absolutely are. So we want you to be part of this process. So in conjunction with the upcoming Max Fun Drive, which, of course, runs May 3rd to May 14th, support our show by becoming a member at MaximumFun.org/join, we are holding a naming contest.
That is right. Starting April 30th through May 10th, we will be accepting submissions to name our podcast. Be as creative as you'd like. Just think about what makes this show unique. What name would best represent this podcast?
And on the final day of the Max Fun Drive, on May 14th, we release the final four nominees. From that group of four, the finalists will be selected.
That's right. Please submit all your name suggestions to Iffy, Drea, Alonzo at MaximumFun.org. Your name suggestion will not be considered if you do not send it to that email address. Don't tweet at me. I will not accept it. And please include naming contest in the subject line. All the rules and stuff will be included in the show notes of this show. All the rules will be included in the link with this video. But just so you know, once you submit the name, you do not own the name. If you submit a name, that's our name now. You have no ownership over that over the show. You can't have it. So also, don't name your new podcast the Untitled Iffy, Dre, and Alonzo Project, because that would be very strange if you did that. Yeah.
That's so it. You have two things to do over the next 2 weeks. One is submit a name suggestion to Iffy, Dre, Alonzo at MaximumFun.org by May 10th to help name our show. And starting May 3rd, become a member of Maximum Fun and support the show, the currently Untitled Iffy, Dre, and Alonzo Project. All right? See you then. Hey, 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 how's it going? And welcome to the Untitled Iffy Dre and Alonzo Project, episode 191. I'm your host, Iffy Wadiway, in the booth with so many of my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up, we have the Christmas Zaddy himself, the king of the books. Behind him, Alonzo Duralde. What's good?
Oh, you know, Iffy, we're getting into that crazy place where everybody's sort of like making their plans about what they're going to do when they're going to be out in the world again, and, you know, arguing with each other about whether or not we're still going to wear masks in public and all that stuff. And I just want to say that while I'm thrilled that our lives are returning to some semblance of normalcy, and that people are going to be, you know, getting back to old routines and maybe like returning to their places of business and other things that have been interrupted, I want to plant a flag on the importance of naps. Naps are awesome, and I really don't want to see those go away in the after times. Like, you know, yeah, fuck the pandemic, let's be done with it, but don't take away my calm app and those naps, because they are really hitting the spot, and I think just in general do everybody a world of good.
Naps are great. Yeah. Naps, I'm awesome. Pro nap all the time. People are naturally cranky babies. And the best thing for a cranky baby is a little sleepy time. Just a little something in your tummy and go nap it off. Yeah.
Speaking of the best thing, the best thing for me and your skin is the queen of the Midwest, Drea Clark. What's good?
Yes. The poser queen of the Midwest. Actually, what's good for me, Iffy, is related to the Midwest, because just before this, I got a text. Both my parents are from Nebraska, which I've probably talked about before. And my dad was just recently home. And so he's like all up in the Nebraska mix. And so he just texted me. He likes to send me quizzes. I don't know if you guys have a parent that likes this, especially if they're movie related. But I also will get like geographic questions sometimes. We're cool. We're a cool family. So he texted me, what are the two best picture winners that were filmed in Nebraska? And I was like, well, one is Terms of Endearment, because you've been telling me that forever. And two, my guess is you think it's Nomadland. So what is yours? And he was like, yeah, wasn't it? And I'm like, well, part of it, but it's also, so then I just started sending him pictures of like Frances McDormand by the Redwoods, Frances McDormand in Nevada by all of the like deep, like those weird pillory looking like hills and stuff. And he was like, yes, the famed vistas of Nebraska. But apparently it's all in like the Omaha Times, and they're totally taking credit for Nomadland. And so what's good for me is I love it when regions want to like just take credit for stuff. I genuinely do. Like, no pettiness. Like, yes, get on board that bandwagon. Enjoy yourself, Nebraska.
Weirdly enough, Alexander Payne's Nebraska was shot entirely in Oregon.
What?
No, I'm kidding. Come
on. I was going to say, I watched that. That was 100% shot in Nebraska. If you ever want to meet my extended family, it is the motion picture Nebraska by Alexander Payne. Ooh. I no, love most, that you could have convinced me. I was like,
such I've faces of credulity that. From y'all.
God, we take you way too seriously.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know things being taken seriously. Speaking of that,
so, no.
Speaking of things Stop being it. Taken too
nope.
seriously,
nope.
Much like food being taken too seriously, much like life, writer for Earth to Ned on Disney Plus, host of The Doughboys, and How Did This Get Played? We have Nick Weiger. What's good?
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. My jaw was literally agape at the Nebraska trivia. My jaw dropped. I was like, that's unbelievable. They played Oregon for Nebraska? How did they pull that off? You totally put one over on me.
I think Alexander Payne films that aren't set in Nebraska are also shot in Nebraska. Like, yes. If you told me The Descendants had been shot in Nebraska, I would believe it.
Here's my what's good, and it actually is inspired by Alonzo's naps, is that I have embraced stretching over this quarantine. When I have time, I'm like, I stretch regularly. And I have someone who has had a terrible back in the past. I believe when Iffy and I were working together was a point where my back pain was so bad that I was literally like lying on my back in the writer's room on ice, like trying to, you know, just get through the day. And that part, a big part of that has been improved by just yoga and strength training and strengthening my core, but also just like regular stretching. And it's such a small chunk of a day in absolute terms to take like 5 or 10 minutes just to stretch. And I just try to do it every day and have it be a part of my routine. It helps me feel better physically and mentally. So I would say, yeah, like that little bit of that small amount of care for my own physical well-being has been huge for me in quarantine. And I hope to retain that as normalcy returns.
That's a great one. A lot of people that work out a lot don't even stretch that much.
That's like, exactly what I was going to jump in here with, which is like, everyone would always be like, bro, you're lifting heavy weights. You should probably implement stretching. I'm like, yeah, cool. And now it's become such an important part because like in my 30s, if I just go and I don't stretch, your boy is laid out. Like I'm just like doing that. Like, because what my body does is it acts like a futon and like tries to close up against each other. It's like all in the core. And you'll know when haven't stretched enough because I'll be walking around the gym outstretching my body, looking like I'm peacocking literally across this gym. They're like, oh, this dude is trying way too hard. I'm like, no, I'm just in pain.
If I saw you doing that, I would take it in stride. I'd be like, oh yeah, that's Iffy.
Hey, Iffy.
Yes.
What's good with you?
Oh, what is good? What's always worse about the what's good is when I'm waiting for it and I'm just like, who's gonna ask? Is it Alonzo? Well, guess what? You won.
Yes.
What's good with me is, you know, I'm probably going to call this my last quarantine pickup. And this was all accidental. But I say my last because I'm about to be so busy. I don't have time for these core hobbies, but I encourage everyone to continue with them. Follow through. Is I got this Kendama, which was, if you remember, 2 to 3 years ago, was really big. It's like a cup. Basically, it's this Japanese cup and ball type system, but there's like three cups. And I got it because like a friend who works for a company was like, oh, we got a bunch of these. Do you want one? And I was like, yeah, I love free stuff. I will never say no. That's why I cannot wait to go to the Emmys and Oscars, because there's nothing I love more. Stop Swag. Saying what's in your gift basket. Stop saying it. Stop getting it taxed and canceled. Please, I need free stuff. but like there's something, I don't know. I don't know what it is about me growing up, but there's that joy in life of getting something for free. Like if there's a sample table, I got to do it. So anyway, I take this Kendama and I was like, well, let me actually learn how to use it, because also I'm a big in the writer's room. I need something to keep my hands busy, or I'm just going to just zone out. So Kendama seemed great, but definitely not in a physical one, because it will be very loud because it clacks a lot, but it is good for hand-eye coordination. I've finally been able to like catch it in the cup and then flip the horizontal cups and catch it. But it's good for like getting up and thinking, because I am the king pacer. Like that's me. Yes. Like if we're like trying to crack a story or something, I get up, I'm pacing, I'm doing it, because that's just how, when my blood's flowing, that's how my mind goes. So I'm real happy to have that as I transition into writing too many things right now. Fun fact that I keep forgetting to say before we start recording, but you know, it's a nice thing that people should know about Drea on air, is my girlfriend, which you know, Drea tried to call me out for last time, was submitting for something for the rap, which I was like mentioning Alonzo, but apparently she was in contact with you and said, like, you're the fastest email responder that she's ever had in the history of sending emails.
Wow.
And I was talking about nice people in the industry and people you want to be connected with, and I had to name drop Drea.
Aww, thanks.
Yeah, so that's that the last piece of peace before we jump into combat. By combat, yeah. I mean,
now that
Mortal
you said that,
combat.
Let's battle. I'm sure there's a catchphrase that would go here. Yeah.
So yes, today we're discussing Mortal Kombat. We have an answer for the call on our hotline, and of course, we have staff picks. But first, it's always time for our new segment, It a Dick, short for Is This Important? Do I Care? Each of us will read a new segment and answer the question, is this important? Do I care? And I'm going to kick things off talking about our good friend, Justin Simeon, making a new Haunted Mansion movie. According to Deadline, the writer and director of Dear White People, Justin Simeon, is in talks to make a movie based on the Disney ride, The Haunted Mansion. This will have no connection to the hated 2003 version starring Eddie Murphy. Simeon is currently working with Disney as creator showrunner for the Star Wars show Lando, centered around the character Lando Calrissian. And Simeon has already ventured into the horror realm last year with the movie Bad Hair, which we talked about on this pod. Listen, to that episode to see how we felt about it. Is this important? Do you care?
Oh, bad hair. Where did that premiere, Andrea?
Oh, that's interesting that you brought that up. It's the Sundance Film Festival.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Parks City, Utah.
They're real up-and-comers.
I didn't mention it.
I think this is important, and I care, because I just want more jobs for Justin Simeon. I think he's awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, the crazy thing about the original, the first Haunted Mansion movie, is that it sort of came out of that, ooh, pirates work, let's just turn all of these into movies, which is, you know, and Nathan Rabin actually just wrote a really fascinating piece about the Country Bear movie, which I've never seen, but it just sounds bazonkers. But yeah, like, why not make a Haunted Mansion movie? I think there's got to be some way to you know, unlock that, if you will. I want him to make whatever he wants to make, so yay.
That's true. And also, yeah, get some Disney budget in there. Do mm-hmm. that. Like, you know, he's someone who's come up through indies, and before that, like, a lot of filmmakers who are on the indie track did a lot of labs and a lot of workshops. Like, there's so much work that goes in even before your first film. And so to see filmmakers be able to turn that around, and like Dear White People, he turned into a series and all of this. I think Justin's one of those great artists that's both artistic minded, but also has a good eye to like broader picture business stuff. And yeah, I'm interested to see this. Like, we talk all the time, and we will talk further today about the idea of like building movies on existing IP, and what does that mean for creativity? And are you shoeholed in for whatever, or is it sort of liberating in ways to have like certain things that you need to follow? I certainly don't have any problem with them. not a problem, and not surprised that, is there maybe money to be made from this thing that we already own? Because, you know, that's what corporations do. But I do like the idea of, because what, you know, whatever Justin pitched was not what someone else would have pitched. And that's what I want most, if you're using something as like, you know, like McDonald's-y.
Here's the bold move. The bold move I want from Disney is an It's a Small World movie where you don't play the song until the very end.
Or at all.
Even better.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it's it is truly exciting to see what they will do. I mean, the one thing, all they have to do is just go with the ride, because there's so much fun lore in the ride itself.
Yes.
And I would just love to see that played out. Like, just all these stories that are within the house, like through the paintings, you know, like, let's do that. We don't have to add, you know, a kooky family, just put someone going through this super cursed house that's super dark, even for like super dark for a child's ride, like when you really look at these stories.
Right. I think back on when Pirates of the Caribbean, the first one, The Curse of the Black Pearl, was announced, and I remember seeing that teaser trailer with no footage before one of the Lord of the Rings movies, and the audience booing at the card for Pirates of the Caribbean, because it just seems so stupid to be like, you're going to take that that ride and make it in a movie? What are you doing? Not realizing that it was basically going to dictate what pop culture was going to be like for the next 20 years. And obviously, that's a huge franchise. And if he's right, the Haunted Mansion ride is cool and has a lot of cool lore in it. And I would love to see that built into a cool franchise, into a cool movie. I also want to note that in addition to Justin Simeon, Katie Dippold.
I was just going to say,
yeah.
Is the screenwriter.
That's right.
Who wrote The Heat, which I think was great. And yeah. Ghostbusters Answer the Call, which did more damage to the internet than anything
underrated
other than Trump. Yeah, it was, the discourse was awful, though.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
like,
toxic,
just
toxic,
so, so awful.
But a fun movie.
Yes. And so, but I think Dippold is who I, full disclosure, I know personally a little bit. I think she has a great tone and aesthetic, and that suggests to me that this is going to be a little bit of a comedy.
Listen, all people
I mean,
need to know is,
I mean,
she is also the person behind that amazing tweet that comes up every year around Halloween,
yes,
of her dressed as the Babadook at her friend's party that ended up being more like a wine party, and it's the best photo ever.
So funny.
You guys, Whoopi Goldberg revealed in a recent cover story in Variety, she's working on a superhero script. According to the piece, the story would focus on, quote, an older black woman who acquires new powers and has to learn to use them. Here's what Goldberg had to say about the project, quote, since I was a little kid, I've been obsessed with superheroes. They're all saving the earth all the time. But do you know who's really going to save the earth? Old black women. Is this important? Do you care?
Yeah, you know, this falls under the categories like, all right, if this is all we're going to make now, then yes, let's please make some with black women, you know, past the age of 50. Why not? You know, in the meantime, you can always check out Fast Color, which not enough people saw. Oh yeah, which is a great movie. And no, I think this is great. And yeah, again, like I think if this is what's going to be the dominant sort of genre at the moment, then by all means, give us all the different variant versions. Give us the queer ones and the POC versions and the, you know, give me a non-binary superhero, all of them, you know. Marvel is finally getting rolling with an Ironheart show for Disney Plus, who's from the character Riri Williams, who is a brilliant young black woman who's an inventor and, you know, sort of like falls under the Iron Man umbrella. And the playwright Shanaka Hodge has been hired as head writer. So there's a lot of this going on, and I'm pro all of it.
Oh yeah, no, I'm pro this. I think as you know, from the nerdy angle, the thing I would like to see that I think that really hasn't been touched is like less of like the aged hero and more of someone at that age getting their powers for the first time. I'd be very interested in seeing that story and how, you know, how that person would take it on. And you know, and I am a Whoopi stan, you know, like, you know, I went like, when was the last Whoopi led movie?
Is there a generation? I was thinking as you were talking, I'm sorry, is there a generation that just knows Whoopi from The View? There must be.
Generation of the person who wrote this article, because they described her character in Ghost as a wise psychic, and I was like, oh, you did not see the motion picture Ghost.
You were not watching that movie.
Right. I really like Iffy's take on like the developing the powers late in life, because I feel like everyone currently on this discussion has taught an older relative recently how to use their phone. Mm-hmm. So,
oh my gosh.
Like, thinking of that age group, like being, oh shit, I'm telekinetic. Like,
Whoopi, get in touch with me and Drea. Gosh,
how do I make my eye lasers? I can't turn them off. They won't turn off.
Oh yeah.
I can't wait.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Whoopi is kind of like one of the greats I grew up watching, so I'm always happy to see her do whatever she wants. So yeah, let her have it. If it was anyone else, maybe I'd feel away, but I do think this is like an untapped way. I think Alonzo's right. If we're doing the superhero thing on everything, then let's get the other stories instead of having more strong white dudes who are good, even though we've shown that white men with power never use it for good. Just
it's a fantasy, Iffy, that's the whole thing. Speaking of powerful white men, right on the heels of winning, nailed it, right on the heels of winning an Academy Award for Best International Feature, Thomas Vinterberg's Another Round is officially, quote unquote, getting an American remake. According to Deadline, Leonardo DiCaprio's production company Appian Way won the hotly contested bid for the rights to the film, which means that DiCaprio presumably would take over the role that Mads Mikkelsen played in the film, a middle-aged history teacher in the midst of an existential crisis. Is this important? Do you care?
I think we talked about it in our Another Round episode that they were going to try and do it. But what makes this movie works is the culture around drinking in their country. Like, I think from the first act, we'll be like, this dude's an alcoholic.
But that might be something they explore. I feel like I have a slightly different, or maybe I'm less like bruise ridden when it comes to the idea of remaking international pictures. It's certainly frustrating that it's such an uphill climb to get so many Americans to just simply watch a beautifully made film with subtitles. Like, that goes without saying. That said, I hope Vinterberg is being paid out for this and gets to make however many more beautiful films that he makes. And then if this is, you know, like, Leonardo was of course not creatively involved, but was in, right? He was in The Departed, yes? Again, an incredibly successful film based on an incredibly successful international film. And it can be done in ways that are unique. Like, this is something I'm like, oh, if they're doing it and they're doing something, because there is such a cultural tie in this film to like how the Scandinavian or European approach to drinking is different. And if they took that into consideration when building this in an American way, that could be really unique and interesting. Like, this is something I'm like, ooh, I would love like Jeremy Saulnier or something to take this on, like to do like an actual introspective look. Cause the stuff that I found most interesting in it was the idea that all of these middle-aged white men were completely incapable of having any emotional discussions. And so it all had to be centered on like dares and, oh, you know what will help me if I'm drunk all the time? You know, when I can talk about the things inside my head or when I'm drinking, like there's a lot there.
There is a way to certainly to make it uniquely American and not merely just sort of go through the same stuff. And, you know, as somebody pointed out, like, yes, Mikkelsen is a trained dancer and that's why that ending was so amazing. But let's not forget the amazing choreography of the Quaalude scene of Wolf of Wall Street, which is like some of the greatest physical comedy in the history of American cinema. That said, I think the threat to delivery ratio of American remakes of foreign films is pretty broad. Like, I'm, you know, remember we were going to get like Tony Erdmann with Kirsten Wiig and Jack Nicholson. And, you know, there was talk about, you know, the Goldie Hawn or Sally Field or Jane Fonda version of Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown. Like, this stuff, they always talk a good game. And then only every so often do we get The Departed or some other movie that actually does it. So I, for one, will be stunned if this thing even happens. But yeah, I agree. Like, it might not be the worst thing.
It seems like, I mean, I'll say for this from the perspective of someone who hasn't seen Another Round, this is the kind of news that might get someone who's less plugged in, like me, to watch Another Round. Because this DiCaprio movie's out. Maybe I'll watch the original in the same way that I feel like, you know, Let Me In, let some people to watch Let the Right One In. Yeah, so I think that's a factor as well.
I like that. Sure. What a unique angle. Thank you, young man. That was great.
You've opened our eyes.
Yes. I hear myself. Like, I'm 1,000 years old. I don't know when this happened.
Well, you know, since you're 1,000 years old, let's take a break because it seems like you're the perfect age to compete in the Mortal Kombat.
Max Fun Drive's almost here. It starts on Monday, May 3rd, ends on May 14th, and it's the best time to support the shows you love. Here are some folks like you sharing what Max Fun and our shows mean to them.
Most importantly, it's meant community.
And just thanks for hanging out, making joke 'em ups, and making my week a little bit brighter.
So, thanks, Max Fun, for making me a better person and making sure that I'm surrounded by better people.
Thanks again for all you do. Love supporting Max Fun, and keep it up.
Come back Monday, May 3rd for more details from your favorite hosts. We'll have some of the best episodes of the year, special Max Fun Drive thank you gifts, and maybe a few surprises. That's Monday, May 3rd. Until then.
Hey, we'll be back to the show in a second, but first, just wanted to let you know that Storyblocks is dedicated to being the world's best royalty-free stock media subscription service with an ever-growing library of stock assets, including music, images, sound effects, and more.
I think it's interesting to think about stock assets being more than just footage, because normally when people are thinking of these libraries, that's what comes to mind. But a lot of the things that can help you if you're building out full film projects or just things short for the web to really make things look crisp and professional, it will give you access to title cards, to templates, to those sort of lower thirds chyrons if you want to identify, you know, talking heads. So there's a lot in Storyblocks that can be just more than I need images of people walking in the background so it looks like I'm shooting in a city. Although certainly that's theirs, that, well, so fair enough.
and they have affordable subscription plans and tools. And with Storyblocks Unlimited All Access Plan, you can get unlimited downloads of everything in their library. And even if your subscription ends, everything you've downloaded is yours to keep. In 2020, Storyblocks launched Restock, an initiative to increase diversity in their library. Storyblocks is committing to having 20% of their footage with people contain Black, Indigenous, and people of color by 2022, with plans to expand their scope to include more underrepresented groups in the future.
And just as a reminder, we are changing the name of the program, but the promo codes are still married to our previous name. So when you explore their library, you can subscribe today at storyblocks.com/whoshot. That's storyblocks.com/whoshot.
Welcome back to the Untitled Iffy, Dre, and Alonzo Project. I'm your host, Iffy Wadiway. In the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Nick Weiger.
Alonzo Duraldi.
And today we're talking about Mortal Kombat!
Mortal Kombat!
Alonzo, would you mind taking on the Herculean task of providing us with a brief synopsis?
I would, actually, but I'll do it anyway. Okay, so and as you'll soon discover, I've never played this game. I've never seen the other movies, as I went in completely cold. So there's this MMA guy, and he has a dragon birthmark, and he's not the particularly great MMA guy, but it turns out the dragon birthmark means that he's the descendant of a really super cool Japanese ninja who was murdered centuries earlier in the prologue by a bad Chinese dude who was played by the great Joe Taslim from the Raid movies. Anyway, this other guy named Jax shows up and who's also got the dragon thing and says that everybody else had to earn theirs by beating or killing the other dude who had the dragon thing, but that our hero was born with the dragon thing and that must mean a thing. But then, of course, the Chinese guy shows up and messes Jax up really bad, and he tells MMA guy to go find Sonya Blade, and he does. And Sonya Blade has this really obnoxious Australian scumbag named Kano hang around, and they make Kano take them to the temple where the people with the dragons can learn what their arcana are. They're very minor arcana. And then it turns out that there's actually supposed to be a big tournament because the Earth realm is going to be defeated by not Earth realm because they lost the last 9, and if they lose 10, we're sunk. But so they got to train, but the bad guys are bumping off the other guys because that's cheating, but that's just how they roll because they're the bad guys. And then there's all about this talk about the Mortal Kombat tournament, and then it never happens, the end.
Yeah, that's the movie I saw.
Okay, well, I'll explain to you.
I've also not seen any Mortal Kombat, played any Mortal Kombat. In fact, I didn't know that they had, like, magical properties until the one guy at the very beginning, like, icicles started growing out of him, and I was like, oh, there's going to be magic. It was a real twist.
Yeah. I also did not see the Mortal Kombat opera.
Yeah, and imagine seeing a magical Iceman and telling them you did 6 tours. But we'll get to that. we'll get to that. There's two things I want to say up front. One, a friend of the pod, Ben Meckler, who also hosts Mortal Podcast. I asked him to give us a blurb that I can read on air about its accuracy in comparison to the games. And he said, with pleasure, and this is what he sent. The 2021 Mortal Kombat movie chose to take the 1993 Super Mario Bros. Movie approach to adaptation. They got most of the famous names in there, some of the general ideas, and then packed with an absolute deluge of other weird stuff. The difference being that all the weird stuff in the 1993 Mario Brothers movie rules.
I hate to break it to him that it does not.
No. That movie is unwatchable. That's fascinating to hear, because I do know the Mortal Kombat games. I don't know them to the degree of which I'd feel qualified to host a podcast about Mortal Kombat, but like this one, it is so packed with fan service to the point where it feels like it's got so many references that it feels like it was a Lars von Trier challenge to like pack in as much fan service as you possibly could into a movie.
That was one of the five obstructions.
Yeah, 100%. And but the lore of Mortal Kombat, and hearing the two of you, your perspective as people who don't know the games or the previous movies, the lore of Mortal Kombat, even among video games, is notoriously inscrutable. It's got so much so much canon and so many characters and so much story going on. And I didn't realize this movie honored basically none of that.
Yeah, to give people a reference, the first Mortal Kombat game was first released in 1992. The latest Mortal Kombat game was released in 2019. And the Mortal Kombat lore goes through all of those games.
Yes.
They've made it a continuous canon. And the story also involves time travel, universe split. There's different universes. And so to construe to get these games to work, you have to imagine that it's so convoluted. Hideo Kojima is like, y'all tripping. A reference only Nick Weiger gets.
And I loved it. So my memory of the games is, this is primarily pulled from the cast of the first Mortal Kombat, which is like Liu Kang, Shang Tsung is the big bad guy, Sub-Zero and Scorpion, Sonya Blade, who else? Johnny Cage they don't get to except at the very end. And Cole Young, the protagonist, wholly invented, is not present in the games at all, which is a bizarre choice because there's so many characters in this movie they could have made, lead.
Okay, you're also blowing my mind because it stood out to me so much. So there's this whole prologue in Japan and you have this Chinese character come in and they do this whole thing of subtitling. And they're going back and forth, I believe, from Mandarin to Japanese. Mm-hmm. And it tells you in the subtitles, so they're like very explicitly laying out the different languages. And then we meet the current day person that we're like, well, this is presumably this like descendant that we're, you know, like who is a Chinese actor, And I was like, why in the world did I just spend 15 minutes learning that like the Japanese guy was the guy who's descendant? And then I meet him and like, I get you guys. And then also I didn't realize it had been centuries, but it was so specific. I was like, oh, this must be, and they kind of explain it later on that like, oh, the best place to hide you, this baby was in China, and therefore like the descendants then, their genealogy moved around. But so specific and weird.
Yeah, it is so, you know, wild that they did that because it definitely, you know, felt like it was playing off like the traditional kind of wars that were going on between China and Japan. But also, yes, they do all this for just totally made up for this movie character. But I do understand why they did it, because all of the mortal combatants in the game are just people from around the world who can kick ass. So they're trying to make a through line by adding this like integral story. And they didn't want to make fans mad by tacking on Scorpion being related to someone pre-existing, because they'd be mad. But I think that we could have got all of this without that new character. Like, we could have got to the, like, I totally did believe that Jax and Sonya went around kicking ass finding this guy and that guy. Who Cole Young also took some of the like Liu Kang flair, because Liu Kang kind of was the reluctant hero of the series. You know, all that stuff with Kung Lao, like that was his like partner, but he also was like a guy who had no clue what the tournament was, kind of was just a regular monk and then was drug into it. And they just gave it to this new character, which I think made a lot of people mad because they backseated the main character of the games.
That was what felt weirdest to me is like, wait, why is Liu Kang kind of in this weird mentor role? Like, he's like a mentor, but he's also like a combatant. Like, he's like, I'm a little further ahead than you on this path to the tournament.
Is Liu Kang the one with the fireball hands?
Yes, he can shoot the fireballs. Him and his compatriot is Kung Lao, and then Kung Lao is fucking badass. And yes, with the hat. And I wanted to see, like, I was like, why not make the movie about Liu Kang and have Kung Lao there as his sidekick, and like, let's get more screen time for this pairing. It's it's a little bit weird. I think the biggest misfire for me is the introduction of this new character, because again, it just feels like, I don't know, it feels like they kind of were just trying to, I think, here's what I was going to say, in a more general sense. Mortal Kombat is stupid, and I feel like they were trying too hard to make it all make sense, instead of just sort of like, let's embrace the stupidity of this mortal, this combat, this tournament to the death in another realm. Like, let's embrace the stupidity of a guy, a yellow ninja named Scorpion and a blue ninja named Sub-Zero who are fighting each other for some reason. Like, let's just kind of have this be what this movie, let's just kind of live in this, instead of like trying so hard to be like, how do we explain Jax's arms?
Whereas wanted them to go the other way. I really wanted to see a Drea Clark present in this collection of combatants, and their super skill was entirely in Excel spreadsheets, because part of what they were lacking was this. They were like, there's been 9 of these battles already in centuries, and yes, this is going to be the one. And we've been looking, and I was like, okay, the people you're looking for with these markings are grown ass, and they get there, and the guy with the fireball hands, Liu Kang, he's like, oh, I'm so glad I brought you here. And I'm like, mofo, you didn't bring anybody. You met them at the door. They got themselves there. Like, that alone, I was like, what is, you guys need someone with the spreadsheet who's like, okay, here's the thing. Here's who we've tracked. Here's where they are. I'm sending them an American Airlines voucher. They're
send Carmen San Diego out to find them.
Yeah. It was bonkers. I couldn't.
Yeah.
Also, if they've lost 9 times, you know, is this like a best of 19 tournament? Like, I don't get why winning the 10th one suddenly undoes the rest of it. Like, it's still 9-1 for the series, you know?
The reason there's this weird number of times they lost is that is the one that's like connected to the game. Yes, in the game, you have to lose a Mortal Kombat tournament 10 times and then your realm gets sucked by the winning realm. So they had to lose. So somewhere, and even though somehow the Earth realm has lost 9 times and no one but Sonya and Jax knew. But and that's why, like, they snuck it in there. The Mortal Kombat was, which the Mortal Kombat was when they were paired off, when they were like, okay, for the Mortal Kombat, you're fighting this person, and that's that tournament match. You're fighting this, which was like so weird, because I'm like, I'm so glad everyone got a freebie round at first to get their ass kicked and it not count. Like, I was like, I'm sorry, the dumbass for me is Shang Tsung. Like, you should have been like, no, that counted. We won that fight. So they're out. You know, like, you waited until they got strong enough to start the tournament. Because that seemed like the only hangup, right, was that the tournament had to start. And then the wall was there. And Shang Tsung at no point was like, okay, let's start it now. Yeah, like, he just was.
That's what I was gonna. That was my big thing as I was watching this movie. And by the way, I should say overall, like, I did really enjoy it, because
Spoiler. This is definitely a snap it up on physical media for me. But like I said, I called Pacific Rim a perfect movie, but I'm still gonna nitpick.
Well, yeah, we're talking about some issues here, but I did think overall it's like it absolutely delivers on what on, again, all that fan service I talked about, the fatalities, how hyper violent it is. Like, that's something you expect as someone who's played the game, and this absolutely delivers it. And as there's a lot of the same quips, you know, from the game as well. But as I was watching it, I felt like Milhouse, to use a Simpsons reference, Milhouse watching the Itchy and Scratchy episode with Poochie and being like, when are they going to get to the tournament? it felt like they never got there. And even when they got there, it didn't really feel like the tournament. Like, it's like, imagine Gladiator without those gladiator scenes, without the Colosseum and everyone fighting and the Emperor giving a thumbs up and thumbs down. I feel like we want to see Shang Tsung in that sort of role, and we want to see this sort of the stakes of what this actually means for everyone.
Because the tournaments, the big, they normally game fight in, like, sorry, Alonzo, in like a proper, like, yes, tournament section, right? Okay. Yeah. Alonzo, you were saying?
They promise a big game that they never get to. But, like, my ultimate deal with this movie is, like, look, I don't have any investment in the IP, but if you had just given me a movie that had a lot of really amazing fight scenes, like, that would be great. But There's so much CG and there's so much like editing and weird camera placement. It's Simon McQuoid is the director. He's never made a film before. And I don't know what he was trying to do half the time. I did get some entertainment and some pleasure out of this movie. Mainly, it was just my shocked laughter at the insane amounts of CG blood in this movie.
Right.
Like, it was, to me, this was like watching the first Evil Dead. You know, it was just so over the top. It's like, this has to be funny now. This could only be funny because it's so ridiculous. And, you know, you've got the hat turning into all these things and, like, just spewing blood all over the place. And so I thought that was funny. But by the end of the movie, I'm like, wait, was I supposed to be finding this funny? Because this movie seems to be taking this all very seriously. Well, and so I don't know if I just was accidentally entertained or if they were actually, that was how they were setting out to do it.
So it is that, I mean, that is tonally the thing about the game, is that the fatalities are so over the top that part of you observing it, part of you taking it in is like, how did someone think of this? This is so depraved. And so like the Kung Lao fatality, which is such a 10, it's such like a jarring moment in the film where he saws someone in half lengthwise, yes, with the brim of his hat. Yes. It's so fucking gruesome.
Natara?
Yes, yeah, and what reaction could you have to that besides like just like laughing in astonishment? Is like, how did they, why the, what happened? What did they do? What is going on? Who thought
of
this?
That isn't an efficient way to murder, but it was badass as hell. Yes. We haven't seen a horizontal body slash in a while.
It's like the old, you know, tie the heroine to the log and send her toward the buzzsaw thing, right, but then not rescue her in time.
Okay,
vote,
well,
vote.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say, Drea. Just me and Drea have we're drift compatible. So lots of times when when I'm getting ready to say vote, she's already saying vote. So
I'm pre-cheering you. Applauding your decision.
Don't
to
get
do that.
Locked in.
Okay, so we'll start off with the suite and let Nick give us his vote. Would you snap it up on physical media, stream it, or skip it?
Stream it. You can see it now. And I would say if it's safe to do so where you are and you're safely vaccinated, this is I'm not at that point yet. I'm still waiting on my second dose. But like I was like, oh, this would have been fun to see in a theater in a different time. Just hear it like Kung Lao saying flawless victory. That's a bunch of nerds going, yeah, because that's such a reference just pulled directly from the game. And there's a ton of that. And I think because like embracing its stupidity. I mean, it does in a sense, I'm contradicting myself a little bit, but does in a sense embrace land of the stupidity of the intellectual property while still trying to make it make a little too much sense. But overall, I would say, yeah, stream it. You can stream it now if you get HBO Max. Why not? It's fun. It's dumb.
Truly.
Drea, what say you?
I must stream it. I actually enjoyed this. I agree with Alonzo that I expected more of the fight scenes. I may not know Mortal Kombat, but I love a whole lot of, like, I've seen a bag load of Muay Thai fighting. Like, there's all sorts of fight stuff that could have, I think, been shot a lot better. They certainly looked like they had the physicality and stunts in place, but I don't think it was filmed to the best extent. That said, it was dumb and fun. And honestly, I would have enjoyed it most in a theater full of fans who, so like at moments like flawless victory, like I said, that hit and I was like, oh, I bet that's a thing. So hearing people be like, this is a thing, would have been great. Yeah.
Oh man. Alonzo, what say you?
I'm going to surprise people and say stream it because is so stupid that it is not entertaining. Like, I did find myself just sort of giggling along at much of it. I would say I don't recommend it as a martial arts movie, but I do recommend it as a horror comedy.
Nice.
So, yeah, I mean, and again, with the same caveat that I say about Hallmark Christmas movies, this is the thing that you should be paying the third most attention to. So, you know, like maybe be eating something or maybe you knit or something, but like it's somewhere along the way, like, oh yeah, that's also a thing that's happening in the room. And you can just sort of look up occasionally when some outrageous buzzsaw hat thing is happening and be like, oh, well, and then, you know, get back to whatever's
your
really
doing. Oh, was that his hat? Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's, whew. Yeah, I think that's the perfect way to describe it, which is why I will say you must snap it up on physical media so you can throw this into your Blu-ray player to see this in crispy, in delicious 4K. And, you know, I haven't pulled this one out for a while, but this was amazing to see on my 72-inch 4K TV. Chris, wow. It really made the blood splatter from the buzzsaw hat really pop off, which is really great. Which I love the buzzsaw hat. For people who don't know the game, because they really do fake you out by you seeing it hit Liu Kang and it doesn't hurt him, like it just kind of dings him. And I was like, wait, what? And then I was like, oh, people are not going to expect that this is a hat, because in the game it is a bladed hat. But yes, there are moments where it doesn't affect people. But, you know, that's one of the charms of the film. But
only when it's necessary for the plot does it actually get the blades. Yeah,
exactly. Yes. It's a, you know, you heard of plot armor. Well, we got plot weapons. We'll be right back, though. But first, what's your word from one of our sponsors?
All right, so quickly, we wanted to speak to you about something else. In 2021, it is finally okay to talk about our mental health, and that is why we are excited to be sponsored by BetterHelp. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions. They'll match you with the therapist in under 48 hours. It's easy to change therapists if needed. Remember, you do not need a traumatic event to benefit from therapy. I truly believe that. Maybe you're feeling anxious or depressed, or your stress feels like it's too much to manage. Get some tools to cope and make your life just a little bit easier.
Yeah, I mean, being stuck in the house has kind of really made a lot of people come to terms with their mental health. And especially in the stay-at-home orders, it made it harder to get out and maybe see a therapist. So having a therapist you can reach out to digitally is going to be great. Plus, BetterHelp is way more affordable than in-person therapy. So you should see if it's for you.
As you know, we are in the process of changing the name of the show, but the promo codes remain the same for now. So just a reminder that this podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and our podcast listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/whoshot. That's betterhelp.com/whoshot.
Mr. Robot Man, what are you doing?
I'm just taking one last look at my coworkers.
Every journey comes to an end.
Remember, Plek, the space will be with you always.
Sorry, who are you again?
Master Kirano.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Just calling in.
Friendships will be tested.
Dar, you have to do it. You have to shoot Plek.
Okay.
Wow, you shot him so fast.
Destinies will be fulfilled.
I've become a complete bird. I'm flying.
On April 28th, the saga starts concluding.
Guys, we don't have a choice. We have to put on a show.
We can do it in the old barn. We've got the costumes, we've got a stage. We can do it, you guys.
Mission to Zix, the final season on Maximum Fun.
Welcome back to the Untitled Iffy Trey and Alonzo Project. I'm your host, Iffy Wadiway, and in the studio with me are
Alonzo Duralde,
Nick Weiger,
Drea Clark.
Now it's time to hear a call from our hotline. Casey, play that call.
Hey, Iffy, Alonzo, Drea, and whoever else is in the virtual booth. My name's Eric, and after Iffy mentioned Old Boy on the most recent episode that I've been listening to, I went back and was watching both the original and the remake, and I realized that Elizabeth Olsen and Josh Brolin are the father-daughter slash, you know, tricked into lovers roles in Spike Lee's remake. And it made everything that happens between them in Avengers Infinity War and Avengers Endgame just take on a whole different spin looking at it like that. And I was just wondering, are there any other acting pairings that you see them in one movie, and then when you see them in another movie, you just have a completely different perspective on what the part is and what the performance is.
Oh, I have one. I have one.
Yeah.
Mine is also involves Elizabeth Olsen and the Avengers, and that is that she and Aaron Taylor-Johnson play a young married couple in the Godzilla remake, and they play brother and sister in Avengers Age of Ultron.
Age of Ultron.
And it's like... Ew. So weird, and like I can't like I get it that everybody has to be in a Marvel movie now, and frankly because everybody's in a Marvel movie, we're going to see more of these combinations of like, oh hey, it's, you know, this person and that person doing something else. But that one in particular, I felt like really the casting from one film didn't make the other casting guy goes, you know, let's maybe not do that pairing. But apparently not.
You know who had great chemistry? I mean, as siblings, but, you know, stay with me. No, or as a couple, I actually had the reverse. One of them came to mind was in the series Divergent. So Divergent and then whatever, Allegiant.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yes.
That, Shailene Woodley and Ansel Elgort play siblings in the Divergent series. Very believably. Like, that's how I met him. And I was like, yes, this fits. And then pretty soon after, they did Fault in Our Stars together, where they're like cancer patient lovers, teen lovers, all words I love saying together. And it was in my head the whole time because I felt they had such better sibling energy between them than like, ooh, I'm super hot for you in this like very dramatic way of young people facing mortality. So it was for sure in my head the whole time.
The one I keep thinking about is seeing Shia LaBeouf's dick in Nymphomaniac, and then holes, you're like, well, I know what he can fit in those.
Oh my God. I hate that I didn't see what you were doing before you did it. Like,
not a couple I was thinking about, but I see where you're going.
Speaking of cinematic couples, Shia LaBeouf and his penis. I had, this is a really small one, but it made me. Okay. Casey, make the boys behave. But I remember when in the Coen Brothers Burn After Reading, both Brad Pitt and George Clooney are in that, and they only interact once. And it's when George Clooney kills Brad Pitt's character because he thinks he's like sneaking in or whatever. And I kept having the Ocean's 11 of the two of them in my head of like where the, it's a very funny scene if you replay it, thinking of them in their Ocean's 11, like Danny and Rusty characters, but they're just like, you know, they've been out of the game for a minute, so they're not. Right. Yes. So if they were like Danny and Rusty, who were terrible at what they did, it would be the Burn After Reading versions.
That's a great answer. I was thinking Coen Brothers because they use such an ensemble, like so many repeat actors, and I was like, oh, there has to be a pairing, and a pairing didn't come to mind, but an actor came to mind. To half answer this question, John Carroll Lynch, the great character actor. And yes. He first came to my attention in Fargo, which is what remains one of my favorite movies, where he just plays Francis McDormand's just doting, loving husband, just seems like the most genuine, earnest guy. He has a large role, like it was a recurring character also on the Drew Carey Show, which I used to watch, the old sitcom. And again, you know, like a very comedic performance. And then he's in Zodiac as basically like the narrative ultimately points to as the Zodiac killer himself. And he is so menacing and so unsettling, and he's so great, but it just completely colors my perception of his performance in other roles.
He played Ted Cruz's father? It's been a while since I've seen that. Yeah.
No, Ted Cruz is the Zodiac killer. Ted Cruz's father killed JFK.
That's what it
is. Oh, yeah, my bad. Sorry.
It's a family business.
I've never been good with American history. I always get myself confused.
And I wouldn't be me if I didn't throw in something from before 1950. Fred McMurray and Barbara Stanwyck, an adorable couple in the holiday rom-com Remember the Night, a terrifying noir couple in Double Indemnity.
Yes, this is a good one. That also helps, Alonzo, because I feel like you and I needed to up our own credibility after what everything you said about Mortal Kombat. So, like, people should know we do have some knowledge in other areas.
That on top of all the Shia LaBeouf dick jokes, you know.
Yeah, yeah. look, come for the dick jokes, say for the story level.
I love Double Indemnity. I had no idea they also made a rom-com together. That is wild to hear.
Oh, yeah.
And one other film, too, I think, like a Western, I think.
Thank you to everyone who has submitted a question. The number for the hotline is 979-803-1664. Or if you want to send us an email, you can write to us at ifydreaalonzo@maximumfun.org. But now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all. So, Drea, why don't you start?
All right. So the movie I have is written, and this is also directed by the person who wrote the film Spontaneous that I said last week or a week or so ago. It's called Love and Monsters. It stars Dylan O'Brien. You can currently rent it. It is a post-apocalyptic black comedy with incredible creatures, so much so that it was one of the Oscar nominations in visual effects. Surprise, like I didn't even really clock that until after I'd seen it. So some beautiful creature design, but it's basically, you know, something happens to the earth and then everybody goes into bunkers and this one guy is like, no, I want to find my high school girlfriend who is, you know, 80 miles away or whatever, and sets off across land. And I just very much enjoyed it. It's fun and light, so it's not a, you know, most post-apocalyptic stuff's a real bummer for some reason.
Such a drag.
And this one just sees all the joy in it, you know? It does not. It's also dark, but it's a very fun view.
All right. Alonzo, what do you have for us?
Okay, so if you're going to give me a movie that's called Mortal Kombat and you're going to put Joe Taslim in it, you are automatically raising my expectations. I try to walk in every movie, you know, blank slate, but, you know, you're making me expect something, and Mortal Kombat did not deliver it. So a movie that will deliver what I wanted Mortal Kombat to be that also has Joe Taslim in it would be the classic 2014 masterpiece, The Raid 2, which is one of the most insanely violent and brilliantly fight choreographed movies I've ever seen. I have friends who still tell the story of sitting next to me at the press screening where I was just like having a succession of like delicious panic attacks over this movie because it was just freaking me out. It's so great. And it is, if you get the Stars app, it's streaming. Otherwise you can rent it on, you know, Amazon or iTunes or whatever. But yeah, The Raid 2, it is the ne plus ultra of 21st century action cinema.
Oh you didn't. I back that up, by the way. The Raid 2 is awesome.
Yes indeed. Yeah, wonderful suggestion, Nick. What say
so
you?
You're maybe in a video game mindset right now. You saw Mortal Kombat, you're thinking about games, you're thinking about other game movies. There aren't a lot of great adaptations, unfortunately, but there is a great movie about video game creation, a documentary called Indie Game the Movie. Now, you should be aware that there is a little bit of controversy in terms of what some of the movies, one of the movies' investors ended up also being a part of the publishing of one of the games that's profiled. So it's not the most objective perspective. They have kind of a financial interest in presenting it as a certain way. And that is the game Fez, I believe. But it also profiles two other, if you put that aside, and it is a minor thing, but it's worth acknowledging. It profiles, you know, these developers, the Jonathan Blow, this guy, I wish I could remember his name. Phil Fish is the guy who's working on, Fez. Jonathan Blow is working on his game Braid. And then there's the McMillan, Ed McMillan and his wife, and a programmer are working, whose name I can't remember, are working on Super Meat Boy. These are all games that were hugely popular and influential in the early 2010s. And it's also just amazing to see these auteurs who are driven by passion working in these circumstances where they're just like, you know, a guy living with his parents, a guy living with and supported by his wife, and just working at one computer, trying his best to try to get a game off the ground. It's a fascinating profile of people obsessed with their passion projects. And I think even if you don't know anything about video games, it's like interesting to watch from a creative perspective.
I love backing things up. And as Iffy knows, I for years produced Indiecade, which is a gaming festival.
Oh, wow.
And this, we actually showed this at it. But for anyone who's wondering, there's a whole world of independent game designers similar, very similar to independent filmmakers. And if you're not privy to that, I highly encourage it because it's always been sort of awe-inspiring in me. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I like that a lot. I like that a lot.
What you got, Iffy?
Oh, you know me.
Bring it home.
Some of you watching it have probably guessed it from the moment you heard this movie. But I'm going to say y'all are going to have to peep that original Mortal Kombat, which I described to this movie to Casey when he was over here shooting some promo that you'll see soon, that this movie would be the like if Mortal Kombat, the original 1995 version or 1996 version, was a standalone movie that wasn't based off a video game and they rebooted it in 2021. This movie is what I'd want it to look like. Where it's like, cause it feels like it's trying to be the 90s and have fun with that. And a whole bunch of fan service. So definitely go back and see it. I don't remember which one was good, Mortal Kombat 1 or 2. They're probably both bad back when Alonzo reviewed them for the first time.
I've never seen them.
But let's see.
He's not you seen have? Them.
I've never oh, seen man. Either one.
I was imagining a young Alonzo just being like,
fuck this movie. Do they have as much like ministry as this new one does? I mean,
they did the 90s where they were like, we're going to chop it in half, but they tried to a little bit. They didn't as like religiously try and follow it as this newer one did.
They had was Ministry, was that a reference to the score?
Yes.
Okay. So it does kind of have like an industrial, like techno, like there's a famous Mortal Kombat techno song that is the origin of Mortal Kombat, of like that huge plaintive yell.
Yeah. Mortal Kombat's kind of like titular song walked so that the blade blood club music could run. Like there's a direct bloodline connection to those two sounds. Okay. Well, Nick, thank you for joining us today. Is there anything you'd like to plug before you get out of here?
Thank you so much for having me. What a delight and to do this podcast and to have an excuse to watch Mortal Kombat and feel productive doing it. This was, check out my podcast, Doughboys, the podcast about chain restaurants and How Did This Get Played, where we review the worst and weirdest video games of all time. We actually recently did a Mortal Kombat episode about the original game with Nathan Barnett. So you can check that out if you're looking for an on-ramp.
Yeah. That's the perfect way. I think that's the companion pod to this episode, might say. But if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at the Iffy Drea Alonzo. Iffy Drea Alonzo altogether. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/ Iffy Drea Alonzo, or send us an email at iffydreaalonzo@maximumfun.org. Our producer is Casey O'Brien. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.